pretty nerve-wracking. Maceo Parker, ladies and gentlemen, it's wonderful to have you here. Now, you've just come from Byron Bay, I believe. Tell us about what was that like for you?
Very exciting. Yeah. Very exciting. You know, it's very, very exciting for me to still be able to, you know, go all over the world and do what we do. And that's, you know, bring the live music to people and try to put smiles on people's faces. And, you know, being here has been, being here in Australia is really, really exciting.
Okay. So you've not, have you been to Australia before? You
must have.
Yeah. Because you toured with, you were with James Brown for a long time. Can you tell us, share with us the story? You've probably told it a million times, but I'd love our listeners who are perhaps not familiar with your work. Who are they? I mean, really, but still, I believe one or two might exist. Tell us about your start in your career with your brother and meeting James Brown, because it's a fabulous story.
Well, I have to set it up. Maybe I can, you know, go through it like quickly, but I was lucky enough to be with siblings, a trombone player a year older than me, a drummer a year younger than me. And ever since we, you know, got to an age where we could keep noise and bang, bang, and whatever, we felt like we had a group. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is that we just tried and played forever. Right. I mean, since day one. And by the time we graduated from high school and ready for college, we were pretty much into what we thought. You know, we sort of played like we wanted to be. In fact, we had seen James Brown play, or heard him play two or three times while we were in high school. And at that time, we felt that we could have worked with him then.
Right.
But now, college, my brother older than me goes to college, college A. I graduate, I go to college B. And when I'm, you know, first year of my college, get with some guys and I'm playing in a group.
Chill.
Now, another year passes, my other brother comes to the same college that I am, is College B. So we're at the same school. Only thing is we cannot work together because I'm already established in a band for my, you know, for my first year.
Yes, and you can't be disloyal to them.
You're
you've
right.
Got to stick with
exactly.
It.
So now there's two groups. Mm-hmm. My brother's playing in the group. I'm playing in the group. Only thing is, sometimes he comes over and sit with me. Sometimes I come over and sit with him. It's called sitting in.
Like, okay.
Oh, this is my brother. Yeah, can he play? Yeah, right. Boom. Anyway, now James Brown comes to town. James Brown is playing at the Coliseum or somewhere, and my brother's playing some other place. I'm playing out of state, and I'm still trying to see if I can make this short. But somehow James Brown finishes his thing and said, "You know what? I'm not ready to leave. Let me. Is there a place where I can go?" Somehow he goes where my brother's playing. And he's, "Oh, golly, I like these guys. Oh, but I really, really like the drummer."
Okay, that's your brother.
My brother. "Can I meet the drummer?" And, you know, talking to the club owner, "Man, you're not going to believe this. James Brown is here. He'd like to meet you, blah, blah." Mm. James Brown says, "Hi, I'm James Brown. I like, you know, I like the way you play to a point where I would love for you to be in my group. Now, I know you're a student. I'm not saying, you know, stop school, blah, blah, but handshake, boom, okay, boom. I get to town. I hear the whole story about James Brown. Now, another year passes.
Yeah.
Say, now we're thinking about getting out of school because we are not studious.
Okay. Music has taken over your
life.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So they say, "What are we going to do?" I said, "Why don't we see if we can get the job with James Brown?" "Oh, yeah, right." So we, how are we going to find him? Well, he got to play someplace in Greensboro, North Carolina, where we were. And so we decided to drive back to Greensboro. This is a whole year later there.
Yeah, yeah.
And we drive around the perimeter of the Coliseum. Say, as soon as we see a limousine, then we know that's James Brown.
Oh,
and then, sure enough, we see a limousine. The limousine goes in the thing. We're right, right behind it, right? Mr. Brown, I'm Melvin Parker, my brother.
Yes.
I'm not a student anymore, and I would love to have, "Oh, right. Oh, come on, guys." Call everybody over. But meet, going on. "Did you bring your clothes? Where are we going tomorrow?" This kind of thing. And, "Oh, yeah, Mr. Brown, I'd like for you to meet my brother. He's a saxophone player. He needs a job, too." I
said, "Oh, yeah." What a good brother to risk it all right there and then.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So the first thing James Brown ever says to me is, "Do you play baritone sax?" Now, baritone sax, a big, real big guy, right?
Yeah.
So I can't say no, because I'm thinking if I say no, end of story, right? Yes, sir. "Do you own a baritone sax?" I was like, "Oh, my goodness." But I still got to say yes. yes, sir. He says, "Tell you what. If you can get a baritone sax, then you can have a job too. Stick his hand out for the handshake. This seals the deal. And give you 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it takes." And that's how it all began.
So you lied to James Brown to get your job.
I did. I did.
Best lie you ever told, right. I'm sure. The most important lie. So, and then you, so you knew how to play a baritone sax, presumably.
I had played a little in high school.
But it wasn't your
instrument. Major. No, right. The major was called a tenor. See, the baritone is a really big guy. The tenor is a little bit larger than the alto, which I play now. But the tenor back then was where you hear most of the sax solos and Aretha stuff and anybody's stuff. Most is the tenor saxophone. But something happened with his tenor player, and he was all worried about, oh, my goodness, I got to get somebody to play. And that's when I sort of stood up and said, Mr. Brown, that's really what I do.
Right.
And said, really? Yeah, we'll give you a chance. And so then when I started playing stuff, different songs in the show, he said, you know, I like the way you play this one and that one and blah, 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 blah. And when the other guy comes back, tell him I want you to do, you know, half, and then he does half and blah, blah, like that. And that's how it all started.
And was it Mr. Brown to you for a long time? Did you ever become first name terms with James Brown? No, it wasn't.
Only if you got mad at him. Okay. That was the way he knew that you were really, really mad. But he would call you Mr. Parker. He liked that for some reason.
Okay, the formality.
The formality, yeah. Okay. Mr. This, Mr. That, Mr. And I guess that's the way he said, well, if I expect it, then I can, you know, also give it. So everybody, Mr. That's just a formality thing. And but if you got really, really mad, you know, come on now, James, come on. Then he knows you're mad and you're serious about whatever. But normally, it's Mr. Brown. It's almost like... you know, the fact that we wore the tuxedos and the bow ties and, you know, everything is clean and everything is positive and
beautifully designed. I saw you at the Metro many years ago now when James Brown was on tour. It was one of the most exciting concerts I'd ever, the build up, you know, the big brass section. I'm waiting for him to come on stage. But you branched off. You went on your own. You decided to become an independent performer, artist, musician. Was that a frightening decision to make in your career, or was it just what had to happen?
Well, no, I when I was something like right around, I guess, meeting James Brown, because I think I was right around 18 or 19, thinking while I was in school, thinking, you know what, you go to schools to teach, to become a teacher, you gotta, you know, stay in school, get a certificate, you teach. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, or I felt that I didn't want to be a teacher. So I'm only left with performing. Mm-hmm. So if it takes step one, step two, step three to perform, you know, maybe I can, you know, perform this people, and then get kind of known, and then somehow it'll lead me to doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
But I always wanted to travel. I mean, not always. Once I decided I did not want to teach, then that was the only thing that's left. Yeah, I would love to just be able to travel, play my own music, have my name, you know, in the thing, and just have my own band and all of that. And
now here you are doing it.
Yeah, luckily.
And do you like it? Do you like the touring side of being on the road?
I love it all. Yeah. I mean, you got to hear me when I say this. I really, really want it. I long to do this. Yeah. You know, me and my brothers had all the albums about Night Tunisia and April in Paris and da-da-da and over here and over there, da-da-da. And then I remember, it seemed like they're all stars, you know, and I give a starry night once, and I looked up, the sky is full of stars. And I said, my goodness, look at all the stars. But if you somehow could put one more up there, it seemed like there's always room for one more.
Yeah.
And I started looking at my career like that. Like, you know, with all the saxophone players, all the, you know, band leaders and whatever, there's always room for one more. And, you know, I tried to do whatever and somehow.
But that's so great, because so many people think it's already too crowded. There's already somebody doing that. I can't do that. But I've never heard someone say that before. Actually, there is room for one
more person. That's the way I felt about it. Yeah. You know, God, did somebody just got to, you know, move over and make room for me, because here I come. I'm coming. Oh, yeah.
I'm coming to get you a look out. And look, you are sampled a lot. People use your pieces of your music. Is that flattering? Is that, you know, is that frustrating with people? Sort of, is it theft, or is it adding to the world of music as a whole? How do you see that?
I don't even worry about it anymore. I you know, at first, you know, before the sampling machine or whatever the thing is called, and then when you first start, you say, wait a second, that's not, and then, you know, you feel kind of that, wait a minute, that's not right, is it? And then as it goes on, and, you know, sometimes you have like legal people to handle that, and, you know, I don't like negative stuff.
No.
You know what I mean? And to a point where sometimes I don't even listen to the news. But I like all positive stuff. I think, you know, it's I try to have like a perfect world, and then yeah. But I understand it's not perfect. But I try to shy away from all the negative stuff.
Yeah, what you can avoid.
Yeah,
yeah, you step away from.
Right, but like I said, there are legal people who handle that stuff, and
yeah,
they let me know what's
up. Yeah, that's right. Let them get all. Exactly. Let them get the cancer and worry about all the dark, nasty stuff. And when you're on tour and meeting audiences, do you find that people are still growing? You know, there are more and more people coming to understand your music and your stuff, or is it?
Yeah, when I look out in the audience, and you know, there's a feeling when I look out in the audience and people doing whatever they do, I get the feeling, it's crazy. I never would imagine that it would come to a point where people name their kids Maceo. And, you know, I've signed cars and walls and books and chairs and
amazing,
you know, pets and all kinds of stuff. And Maceo, remember this picture of my 2-year-old kid? What you sign, you know, you always recognize your own handwriting. Yeah. You know, whatever. So we love you, I love you, or something. Maceo, and you say, yeah. That was 18 years ago. Now here's my kid. Now it's 20 years old. It's like, hi, how are you? You know, I mean, it's amazing. It goes on and on and on.
It does. Yeah. And on that subject, do you keep your musical tastes refreshed? Do you keep seeking out new sounds and new bands and new people, or do you tend to listen to your old stuff, or what are you listening to?
Right now I listen to old Motown stuff.
Okay.
The Temptations, I don't know if what on the Benny King, the Drifters. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I love the stuff. But my whole concept is funky. You know, as long as it's funky, and this is sometimes I explain it like this. If you had something like a meter, some kind of electronic meter that runs by batteries, and you're out in the field, and the field and the thing makes a noise when it's metal, and it goes like if it's metal, you know,
there's beep, 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 the gold detector thing.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, if you can imagine a funky machine like that, and if you have it on, and if meaning it go tick, which means funky is funky.
Yeah.
If it were funky 20 years ago, it's funky. You know what I mean?
Still does it for you.
And long as it's funky, that's good enough for me.
But there's you have this strange intersection where you have this support of folk as well, like Annie DeFranco and James Taylor, and you know, because my two big loves are folk and funk, right? Yeah. So, and people say, oh, they're so opposed. But actually, I find there's plenty to like in both. Where do you see the intersection in those two genres? Or is there no intersection? You just like them both?
Well, it's a slash music in there, too.
Mm.
You know, because you can do like ballads or slow stuff or show stuff. You know, you could do Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which is music. Yeah. It's not funky.
No.
But it's close to like a ballad, right? Which I love ballads too, you see.
Okay.
So somewhere in between, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's still got to be music.
Yeah.
You know, I can sort of fit in. And I love to have ballads in between the stuff that we normally do. Let's break the monotony, if there's a monotony in it. Just funky, funky, funky all the time.
Right.
You got to change it up a little bit, and I sort of learned that as I
went along.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You just, when you work with people, there's other people who are, you know, perhaps not as, or, you know, categorized or whatever, you just play your thing. Just do your thing, sort of satisfy them and satisfy yourself at the same time. That's another thing that I do. Whenever I take on a project, somebody else's project, I treat it as if it's my own.
Okay.
And I think the interest in me, there must be something that they like in me to, you know, just say, when are we can get Maceo to come over and do that? So when I go over, I just, you know, say, okay, this is like my project. So I give it all that I can, what I think, you know, it works from my point. And do it.
And do you think that's part of the reason why so many people want you to be a performer with them? Because it's not just the technical perfectionism that you bring, it's the attitude as well.
I think a lot of it is, there was a time when everybody really, really, really loved James Brown.
Mm.
You know, and then James Brown really sanctioned me, you know, come on, Maceo, blow your horn. Come on, Maceo. And a lot of his songs.
Yeah.
And so because of James Brown saying, come on, Maceo, blow your horn, come on, Maceo. I said, wow, I wonder if I could say that. You know, James Brown did it. Maybe I could do it. Yeah, is Maceo still around? Well, let's see. And then somewhere that, come on, Maceo. Yeah. It's same as James Brown. And I've got so many opportunities in different places to play and be on recorded simply because of that. So it's a big percentage of that.
Yeah.
And then I'm basically your number one nice guy anyway. So.
Well, clearly you are. Clearly you are. And look, thank you so much for joining us today. We are going to have Busted by you playing for us now. And we wish you all the very best for your time in Australia. And thanks so much for popping in and seeing us today. I really am so thrilled.
That's
thanks
a pleasure.
So much.
Thank you.